Chapter 76. It's as black up here as the bottom is at 1,000 feet. There was little exaggeration in Giardino's assessment of the scene out of the submersible's viewport. Just moments before, the bloodhound had punched through the surface amid a boil of foam and bubbles. The two occupants still had hopes of finding the lights of the narwhal twinkling nearby, but instead found a cold, dark sea enshrouded in a heavy mist. "Better try the radio again before we're completely out of juice," Pitt said. The submersible's battery reserves were nearly extinguished, and Pitt wanted to conserve the remaining power for the radio. He reached down and pulled a lever that sealed the ballast tanks closed, then shut down the interior air filtration system, which was barely functioning on low voltage. They would have to crack the top hatch for fresh but bitterly cold air. They called on the surface, but their radio calls continued to go unanswered. Their faint signals were picked up only by the Otok and blithely ignored at the order of Zack. The narwhal, they were now convinced, had vanished from the scene. "Still not a word," Giardino said dejectedly. Contemplating the radio silence, he asked, "How friendly would your pal on the icebreaker be if he had a run-in with the narwhal?" "Not very," Pitt replied. "He has a penchant for blowing things up with little regard for the consequences. He's after the ruthenium at all costs. If he's aboard the icebreaker, then he'll be after us as well." "My money says that Stenzeth and Dahlgren will give him a handful." It was little consolation to Pitt. He was the one who had brought the ship here, and it was he who had placed the crew in danger. Not knowing what had happened to the ship, he assumed the worst and blamed himself. Giardino sensed the guilt in Pitt's eyes and tried to change his focus. "Are we dead on propulsion?" he asked, already knowing the answer. "Yes," Pitt replied. "We're at the mercy of the wind and current now." Giardino gazed out the viewport. "Wonder where the next stop will be." "With any luck, we'll get pushed to one of the Royal Geographical Society islands. But if the current throws us around them, then we could be adrift for a while." "If I had known we were going to take a cruise, I would have brought a good book. And my long underwear." Both men wore only light sweaters, not anticipating the need for anything warmer. With the submersible's electronic equipment shut down, the interior quickly turned chilly. "I'd settle for a roast beef sandwich and a tequila myself," Pitt said. "Don't even start with the food," Giardino lamented. He leaned back in his chair and crossed his arms, trying to maintain warmth. "You know," he said, "there are days when that cushy leather chair back in the headquarters office doesn't sound so bad." Pitt looked at him with a raised brow. "Had your fill of days in the field?" Giardino grunted, then shook his head. "No. I know the reality is, the second I set foot in that office, I want back on the water. What about you?" Pitt had contemplated the question before. He'd paid a heavy price, both physically and mentally, for his adventurous scrapes over the years. But he knew he'd never have it any other way. "Life's a quest. But I've always made the quest my life." He turned to Giardino and grinned. "I guess they'll have to pry us both off the controls." "It's in our blood, I'm afraid." Helpless to control their fate, Pitt sat back in his chair and closed his eyes. Thoughts of the narwhal and her crew scrolled through his mind, followed by visions of Lauren back in Washington. But mostly his mind kept returning to a lone portrait of a broad-shouldered man with a menacing face. It was the image of Clay Zack.